classical scholar and studied classical Greek and biblical Greek. He was, I believe, one of the people during the Second World War who was involved in breaking the German Enigma code. Very, very clever man, and he really, for most of his life, I think, was out of the new church in the sense that he had to hide it from his Cambridge colleagues. When he retired and he was granted rooms at Cambridge permanently and no one could shift him, then he came out and said, oh, actually, I believe in Swedenborg, and started translating Swedenborg's work. So we, as theological students, were taken to meet this eminent man, and he was talking through the issues of translation. And one of the things that he said, I remember very clearly, and he was talking about computer search programs such as this, but he was speaking specifically about the writings, about Swedenborg's work. He said he was very, very unsure about the use of computer searches, especially where they search an English term. Because where they search an English term, we have lots of problems. We have problems that the idea of synonyms, we tend to use words to mean the same thing, just to introduce a bit of variety into our sentences. We have the other problem, which is we tend to use one word to translate multiple terms from the foreign language into English, since English doesn't have the equivalents. So he was very unsure about using a computer search to look for an English word, because we would have issues in doing so, that we would not actually be getting into the real meaning of the text. And this, obviously, for me, is something I face on a regular basis, because, as I say, I am not a linguist. I did a couple of weeks where we got together with some friends and started learning biblical Greek, but that's as far as I go. So understanding and working with texts written in three different languages of which I have no knowledge, how on earth do I not get lost in that? So I want to, first of all, awaken you to that reality, because we are all working in those same texts. And then I want to look at, well, how can we solve this problem or get around it so that we actually understand what is going on. I'm going to begin with the Bible. Then I'm going to look at Swedenborg's work, and I'm going to get you to break out in a little while. But I just want to show you some things so you're aware of what's going on. So I've put my computer concordance up here. I want you to look at this first verse. This is Genesis chapter 1, and this is verse 25. And God made the beasts of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Seems nice and straightforward to us. What I want you to be aware of is this. When I click on these words, it will give me the word behind it, which is rather handy. So it tells me it might get it wrong if I'm not careful. And it thinks about it. Here is the word. How would you say that, Julian?
Eretz.
Eretz. So that's that one there. Okay, let's just... Oh, and I'll do it here. Let's go here. Now, everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. What's that one? Now, it's a different word. Now, if you then go to what Swedenborg... So what I'm now going to do is read from Arcana Celestia, Volume 1. This is the John Eliot translation, sort of mid-80s it was issued. So when John Eliot translates Swedenborg's Latin translation of the Hebrew text, this is what comes out. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and... that's that one. Sorry, this one. And God made wild animals of the earth according to their kinds, and beasts according to their kinds, and everything that creeps along the ground according to its kind, and God saw that it was good.
Right.
Now the thing is, okay, imagine what your Bible translators are trying to do. They are trying to take the meaning of the Bible and put it into understandable English. Okay. So, you know, in a sense what they've written there is fair enough. The problem we face is that we look at the literal texts of the Bible and we say that the words and the different words have different meanings. Swedenborg actually says about this, when a person has become regenerate, he is no longer called the earth, but the ground. The reason being that celestial seeds have been implanted within him. So there is a whole significance there we completely miss because the translation uses earth both times. Okay. So when you read the Bible, you have to be aware of this.
Can I give you another example of that?
Absolutely, I've got plenty more too.
Okay. Jesus said to the disciples, so this is Greek New Testament, Jesus said to the disciples, a little while and you will see me no more. Again a little while and you will see me. And they went, what? The word see, the first word, is the word for physical sight. The second time he uses see, it's another word and it means perceive. Mm-hmm. Totally different meaning. We've got a translation that says, now you see me, now you don't see me, but you will see me.
Oh, dear.
This is one of the classic passages that I remember, and it is the word love. Okay? Jesus meets the disciples on the seashore. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. The word love is different. Okay? Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Agape. We're familiar with agape? Unconditional love, if you like. Unconditional love. Yet Peter says this, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Filio.
Friendship love.
And again, it's the same. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Agape. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Filio. He said to him a third time, do you love me? Filio. Peter gets worried, you know, he's concerned again, he's been asked about Filio. Lord, you know all things, you know that I love you. So Peter and Jesus are talking at this cross purposes until that last question, which is why one of the reasons Jesus asked three times. Completely missing in the English. You don't get a sense of that because of this idea. Because we've used one word to translate two different ones. Another one, oh, that's a little bit different.
Oh, you've got a comprehensive handout, David, for us.
I don't have a handout at all. Well, you will get my notes, I suppose, if you look on the college website in about a week's time. That's not able to be
The Good News Bible, David, doesn't even try to be as precisely accurate as this. They just make it acceptable to the ordinary reader.
And I've got another one called the Contemporary English Version, which again is the same. I mean, it is, you look, and in fact it's worse in many regards than the Good News Bible. But what I want you to be aware of is the fact that irrespective of what translation you are using, this is going to be a problem. Don't think that your translation gets it right and then take that and make that a basis for your assumptions. You've got to go digging a little deeper. This is where I love this particular tool, to be able to just jump into it. I've got a book somewhere which I'll show you, which is rather heavy, but gives you the opportunity to do the same thing. Revelation chapter 6. Okay. So I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and the name of him who sat on it was Death, and Hades followed him. Okay. This is interesting. The word is chloros, green. Greenish, pale.
Oh, dear.
Yes, the word chlorine.
Chlorophyll.
Chlorophyll. Chlorophyll?
Yes,
chlorophyll. Okay.
Not chlorine. Yeah. Chlorophyll.
Not chlorine?
Chlorine is green.
Yeah. So, we pale horse, we think, okay, pale horse, there's nothing special about that, but there's something special about a green horse. Okay. So you can just be aware of this. Okay. Now, here's one for anybody who was in Canberra at the service last week, who will know this one. Was it? Jeremiah 17:10. This one was astounding. Oh no, what am I doing? On that. Okay. I, the Lord, search the heart, I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings. The reins, which are the kidneys. I, the Lord, test the kidneys. Is it down here? Now, sometimes it's translated as inner man, or the hidden parts, or all sorts of things. I actually mentioned kidneys in here, but that's what it is. It's the kidneys. So that is actually, I, the Lord, search the heart, I test the kidneys.
Which is your ability to filter.
Yes. Now, you go into a Bible dictionary, so I've got here, my trusty New International Dictionary of the Bible. You go in here and you look up the kidneys, having discovered that, and you see that the kidneys was a common reference of the day to the mind. And you think, okay, that's fair enough. I can understand why they've made that translation. Because for the ordinary person in the street today, reading, I, the Lord, search the heart, I test the kidneys, they say, what? What is that about? It's complete nonsense. But for the Hebrew, for the Jew reading that, they'd understand it. They get the context, the cultural context. So we've translated as mind to make it understandable, but we've lost something. Because the kidney's function is to filter. It's purification. See? And in there, okay, search the heart, the will, test the mind, the understanding. And the understanding's function here is to filter. To filter our thinking. And we were talking about this earlier today, not long ago, at your session, I think. The idea that thoughts are just coming in. They're coming in all the time. Our job is not to stop the thoughts, it's to filter them. It's what the mind does, you see. So we've lost something through this translation. It's there to make it understandable, but if we really want to understand what it's saying, we need to dig a little deeper. There are plenty others. I've got another couple of examples, and if you download the notes from the college site, you'll see them. But you get the idea, I hope. Now, the question is, how do we deal with this situation in regard specifically at the moment to the word? So what I do, I use this for one thing. My computer program has this lovely facility to be able to dive into what the word is. So this essentially is Strong's Concordance. Is everybody aware of Strong's Concordance?
Numbered.
Yep. So here it is in book form. I'm terribly indebted to Mr. James Strong for doing this work. So he's, you would go through, you look up a word, and this, he's indexed the words of the King James Bible. So you would look up a word such as mind in a, what is just alphabetical, okay? And under the word mind, there will be every occurrence of the word mind in biblical order. It will give you the Bible reference, it will give you just a snippet, a couple of words either side, and then in the very far right hand column there is a number, and the number refers to the word from the Hebrew or the Greek. And then you go to the back and you look at that number in the lexicon. So the back part of this book is first of all a Hebrew dictionary and then a Greek dictionary, and you look up the number and you see the actual word. He tells you various things like how to pronounce it, and he tells you the ways in which it is translated, in the various ways in which it is translated in the King James Bible. So that gives you a some sense of some of the meanings of those words. You can go to things like a Bible dictionary, where you would look up some of those words. And particularly, I mean, in this case, so I would go here, I test the mind, discover that the mind is actually the kidneys, and then I'd go looking in here to see what the kidney, what it says about the kidneys. And that will give you some of the background, like, well, for the Hebrews, the kidneys reflected this. Sylvia?
How do you know which word might be wrong?
Yes.
How, which words you should check? You have to check all of them.
No, there's no problem there, because you know these people who've constructed this and those are in expert proximity to what is known of ancient manuscripts and original texts.
Yes.
And so on.
I mean,
so
when you're reading, how do you know which word
is
there?
Well, you've got to
You have to do a lot of clicking. You do.
Yes.
You have to do a lot of clicking.
It is generally... It is generally the word that jumps out. By the Lord and he who speaks to you will probably not have a problem with any of those words. But then you come to the word heart, or the word sorrow, or something like that, which is a more concentrated word. Those are the ones to watch out for.
There are free Bible programs you can download if you're interested. One's called the word, as one word, .org, and the other is called eSword.
Yes.
And both those, you know, you download them, they're free, and they have Strong's concordance built in, like this. Some of them display, I can't remember how they both work, but some actually will display the number of the word, so you'll get, so every word, like in a particular mode of viewing, will have a superscript number. And if you click on that number, it'll bring it up.
Can't do that here.
So the good thing about that is that, like, if it's mind,
what was the other one?
It's a love. You can just, as you're reading, you can see if there's a difference, because the number will be different, and that might spark your interest to go a bit deeper, just to see what the difference actually is.
One thing you can do here is the King James. I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins. Now, reins, we're not used to using them. That word in English these days. I think of renal. But reins actually wouldn't make that link for me at first. That was only understanding the word renal that I recognised, okay, that's where the connection is. But reins wouldn't have done it. But what you can do is you can compare various translations, and you can see different ways in which the translators have dealt with different terms. There's obviously going to be a lot of overlap, but there'll be some things like this. I have to say, in this case, the King James is the only one that I found that used a different word. And I've got 8 translations on my shelf.
Okay, I can help you.
Go.
There's a translation, again, which you can order online. It's called the Concordant Version. of the both Old Testament and New Testament, but it's called the Concordant Publishing Concern, which is where you buy the actual Bible version from. Now, what they have done in terms of creating this particular translation.
Your sheet yesterday was...
Yes, the sheet from the Luke passage is the concordant version of the New Testament. Now what they have done is they have deliberately had a card index system. They would translate every single Hebrew word that occurs, every Hebrew and Greek word that occurs in the Bible, they would only translate it with one English word. So that wherever that word occurred, either in the Hebrew or the Greek, it would only have one English word. So you don't get a doubling up. So,
Every English word has only translated one
equivalence. Yeah, so there's an equivalency. And so like we have those that passage on love, you would have a different word every time. And that, once you get used to it, that's quite helpful. And also what it attempts to do, which you don't get in the English tends to translate things in terms of past tense, whereas for example Greek has a tense which is not really past tense, but it's kind of it's a present tense.
And continuous.
Yeah, that's right. And so
ask, sleep not, we keep on asking, keep on speaking, keep on.
And so the concordant version tries to capture that. And so it's a bit odd when you're reading it because it's not how we normally phrase things. But what I've found is that that oddness actually is what pulls you up.
Yes.
And gets you thinking about the passage.
Yeah. Which is one of the things I love about Swedenborg's odd terms, really. Proprium. Who in the world knows what proprium means? Well, that then pulls you up and says, okay, there's something different about this word. Whereas if you translate using a word that is well known, it's very easy to pass over. Anyway.
I say just stick with the King James. You won't understand half of what you read, but at least it'll sound nice.
If it was good enough for St. Paul, it was good enough.
That's right. Paul wrote the King James. Everybody knows that.
So
it's the Lord's very word.
Here's another couple of books that I might occasionally dive into. These are both published by Lion, the Lion Encyclopedia of the Bible, Lion Handbook of the Bible. So these are places you can go to check out words and customs and weights and measures and all sorts of things to help you at times get into the biblical text. What you have to be aware of with all three of these works, or indeed any commentary you find on biblical text, is that the translator comes to the work of translation with a frame of reference, a thought process, a doctrine in mind. So they translate with that in mind. Now translators do their best to try and get rid of that as much as they can, but it still can come through. It certainly comes through in books like this. So you need to read these carefully and realize that there can be, as with any human person on earth, a colouring, okay, based upon the person who's doing the work. So just be aware of that, please, when you read those. Now, this was given to me by Julian when I entered college, the Interlinear Bible. So, and what we have here is the Hebrew text with the Strong's number above each word, so you can refer back to Mr. Strong's work there. A translation of that word underneath it, and then in another column, a translation of the text. So you can get the context. Realize, of course, with the Hebrew, you're reading backwards. So it can be in, you've got to get used to reading back the English words backwards. But it's not a huge leap.
Right to left.
From right to left.
Yes.
Yeah.
Each word is left to right.
No.
You reverse the order.
You reverse the order of the
words. Yeah,
that's
right. Still left to right.
That's right. So that's,
But when the power goes off and you can't get it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It isn't how left-handed people read anyway.
So... Those are biblical tools, and I would urge everybody, when you're reading the Word, especially when you're trying to really get into it, understand that this is an issue, at least. And just be aware of some of the tools you can use to work your way around it, Philip.
One other thing to add to what you said, David, is in the assembly in 2005 in the US, they were encouraging people that came to the assembly that knew of any mistakes in translation to provide whatever they knew. And I picked up one or two things from Doug Taylor, who pointed out something, and somebody else, I think it was one of the bishops, a mistake in translation, and I gave those to the people running this particular table, collecting all these corrections. And anyway, they've moved much further beyond that in America now, in the general church, and they've got the translation, the King James translation, on the internet, and they invite scholars anywhere that think there's some problem with the translation to put their tuppence worth in. And the church scholars will assess what they see. And this process has been running for a number of years. And then they published the version, I think it was last year, Kempton Project. And so you can get onto the internet, have a look at the Kempton Bible, and see just what presumably is the latest state of affairs as far as translation is concerned.
I thought, doesn't reading Swedenborg mean you don't have to go and try and interpret the Bible yourself, or you do it still?
No, do without the Bible. It's been tried.
No, but I mean, I thought he was sort of, you need to, you're still using both.
I think there's two things I would say about that. First of all, Swedenborg never covered the whole Bible. The second thing is the reason he never covered the whole Bible for me. I think he might have liked to, but I don't think that was his purpose. I think his purpose was to give us the principles so that we can go and interpret the Bible. And the reason for that is that in doing that interpretation, what we are actually doing is working on ourselves. I guess you would agree with that. So there's something about doing the interpretation ourselves which is fundamentally important to our own growth. That's where I am at, way back, I think. So it would be very easy to be able to turn to Swedenborg and say, well, Swedenborg says. But, and look, I remember my dad talking about, he's also a minister, talking about colleagues he knew who would only ever preach from passages that Swedenborg had written on. And written on very clearly. So that sort of attitude certainly is around, but I think there's something fundamentally important.
It's the dream dictionary attitude.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Look it up.
Yes, you look it up. And it's a very intellectual, impersonal, out there thing, and it doesn't really get in and affect our lives. And I think that's an important part of the whole struggle.
I also know ministers who conservative ministers who only use Swedenborg's translations. They'll use Swedenborg's translations that he has within the writings.
Okay.
Because they consider those more enlightened than. Okay.
Well, I mean, I sort of understand that when you look at that Genesis 1, because it reflects a change in the text that isn't in the translations that I've got, you know, which is. And Swedenborg makes a point of it.
A very good example of that is. The Bible talks about Joseph being a coat of many colours. Mm-hmm. Swedenborg's take on that from its other possible meaning or its original meaning is Joseph was in a coat of many pieces. Okay? So colours is not the focus, it's actually.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pa- pa-
patchwork.
Now, what I want to do, I want to get into the writings. Because please do not imagine that the writings are immune from this. It's a translation from Latin into English. Now, the work that I'm going to get you to have a bit of a play with today is this, the Swedenborg Concordance. Reverend J.F. Potts, is that right? Put this together, a 6-volume work doing the same work that James Strong did with the Bible, with Swedenborg's text. Now, what I want to draw to your attention in this is, so again, we have words that are translated in English. You go look up the word knowledge, for example. And here is a couple of the pages of knowledge. Now, the word here is actually know. What he does is, so here we have the beginning of this particular one, and he lists a number of words: know, knowledge, scientific, scientifically, knowing, knowable, knowingly. So all of those words are grouped together in this category, but what he's also done side by the side of those is he's actually quoted each of the Latin words that have been translated here. Now, if you can see, up the top of the page, there is the English word know, and then in italics next to it, the Latin root word, if you like, that is being translated in that section. Because just before it, there is know, and a different word that is being translated. Okay? So in this case, my Latin is terrible. S-C-I-R-E. How would you say that?
Scire.
Scire. Whereas this one is N-O-S-S-E.
N-O-S-S-E.
No, N-O-S-S-E, yes. No. As in acquaintance. Nosse?
Nosse.
And then before that, there's another one, and there's another one. So there are several words that might be translated know or knowledge. Now, here's your job. I want you to divide into 6 groups. I want you to take one each of these. I want you to look up, there's 3 parts of this task. Find a word where the English translates a couple of different Latin texts, Latin words, and you will find them by that. So the easiest way to do is flick through it, like this, and look for, here's one, lie. Where at the head of the page there is the English word in bold and the Latin word in italics next to it. So you will find there will be at least 2 English words, sorry, the same word twice, with different Latin terms next to it. Do that first. Second thing is, what do I want to do? Second thing is, differentiate between them. What's the difference in the meaning? And then I want you to tell me what the significance of the difference is. Right? So, let's just randomly put these out. And you have 20 minutes. Now, there will be several examples within your book. It doesn't matter which one you choose. Go. And one more.
We have 15 minutes.
Okay. English words used to translate multiple Latin words. It was touch and go with Sylvia and Sally and Dorothy's group, has to be said, but we found one, which is good. Did you manage to differentiate between them?
Not very well.
To understand it.
So, can you just talk about your word? What was your word?
Heat.
Heat?
Yes. We found.
Estus, Kylo, Fervor.
Fervor.
And
Estrus.
Estrus.
Okay. But you were not able to distinguish between them at all?
Well, not really sure.
Estrus
is vernal heat, but we didn't really know what that meant.
And the Kylo is external warmth?
Well, we're not really, I'm pretty really sure that that's true, because it talks about lots of things and you don't actually
Get it in a nutshell.
Get it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And Aestus, they talked about temptation as to the heat. So
yes, okay. All right. Can I throw out
for three of us?
Yes, yeah. We have the word world, and there were two options. One was Mundus and one was Orbis.
Yes.
And Mundus is a spiritual world, and Orbis is is the physical planet.
Yes.
The globe.
Yes.
Okay? Of the main thing. Now, shut up, Julian, Jeremy and Martin. How do we distinguish between meaningfully? Why would Swedenborg talk about the globe at all? How would we distinguish between the spiritual world or my world and the concrete world?
I got what you said. I've forgotten what you told him.
Jeremy remembers.
The differences between each world
is this world. Yep.
Physical stops, but the spiritual keeps going.
Yep. And also
gift.
Gift. If you do something, if you want to do, you love to do good, you wish to do good, you form a way of doing good, you actually do good, and it's physical.
Gift.
It's an act.
It's an act that comes into realization. So that's.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Over here we found, what was it?
We found
Earth.
Yeah, Earth and the light.
Yeah, we just looked at different.
Okay. Look at the ones that are
What Julian's talked about is a bit of the significance of the difference, and I wonder if anyone else can get into that with their terms that they found. Can you get into the significance of the difference?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Earth Telos means it's the Earth, the planet Earth. Earth Terra is the ground, the land, you know? And that sort of thing. When it came to Delight, oh, I've forgotten that.
Here it is. There's Delatari.
Yes.
Which is?
Delatari is like when someone enjoys doing something but it's bad. Like playing Delight.
It's something desirable, something that somebody wants to desire.
Like if they want to kill and punish, things like that, they delight in that. Mm. And that's bad. That's the. Tell us one. The other one, Delight, Delectare, that's lovely, peaceful, and happiness and harmony. Mm. Good things.
Anybody else found the significance in the difference?
Yes. We found the word proud.
Crowd?
Proud.
Proud.
And there's the Latin word vastus, and the meaning behind that seems to be egocentric proudness. Well, there's superbia, and the meaning of that seemed to be a feeling of being proud of one's achievement. Yes, so one seems to be in attitude, one has that I'm above others, I'm superior to others. And the other one is more just a feeling of delight that one was able to do something.
Okay.
So one's good
and
that one's bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you want to say
something? Oh, I'm not wondering if what I'd like to say really adds to the value of what you're doing, but we picked nature, the English word nature, and it's got two different Latin words. One is indoles, and the other one is natura. the one in Dola is really meant, translated or used for character or disposition, the nature of a person in terms of their disposition or quality, and native quality. And whereas natura is also close here to create naturare, and it's more the actual external nature, the environment type thing, or things in an environment, like natural world stuff. But it does also at times talk about nature as it uses dollars in the same way, that the disposition of quality nature is being used. And so we struggled a little bit with that because there is that overlap there. But, you know, it is mainly that is the distinction between the two. And I mean, because we don't have the time to go in through that, but I think possibly that the distinction between the two use of the word nature in terms of the quality of character side might be one more on the internal, one more on the external.
Okay. That's great. Look, thank you for taking part in that exercise. Here's one that I found that was hidden, in a sense, in the translation of light. These two words, simply because in volume 4, this one, lumen is given its own word, but as lumen. So that's identified as an English word translating exactly the same Latin word. Whereas here we have it in Eliot translating it as light. So this was a hidden example. Okay, so the word light is here used here, but actually the word is lumen, which you will find in other translations of Swedenborg's work, which I found interesting and challenging. There it is.
That's a publishing thing as much as anything now, isn't it? Because obviously lumen is no longer used.
It's an old-fashioned word.
Yeah, you wouldn't use it if you were publishing.
Yeah, that's right. So books then that I would go to help me with some of this is, there's this one, Words in Swedenborg by Frank Rose, which helps you sort of come to terms with the definition of words. And similarly, Glossary of Terms and Phrases, again, you recognise the binding, Julian. So again, you would look up the English word and get the Latin word, and then you'll have something of the context or some way of defining what that word actually means. So you'll look up...
That I looked the word state up in initially.
Okay.
Of course, it's there through Swedenborg, but yes. Does he say anything about what state means? And that's that we go.
Yeah.
Is that being republished?
Anybody know about that? This is Borg.
It's a bit of a problem when you've got
John
telling us about books that you can't acquire.
It's probably online in research for good.
Possibly so. Yeah.
One issue with those, though, is with the New Century edition. Now there's new terms replacing old terms.
Yes.
Some of these terms, like the Frank Rose, you don't need explanations anymore because those terms are more used. Some of them.
Yeah. And one of the issues that I have, and someone may be able to enlighten me, is that I can't do the same thing with Swedenborg's writings as I can do with my Bible program. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of a program that allows me to look up the English text of the writing, click on a word and see, that's the word that's being translated. If you go into New Search on the website, you can get the Latin text and you can compare it alongside the English text, but you can understand me, as a non-linguist, is going to struggle doing that. Okay? So it would be nice to have that sort of tool, and I wonder if anyone's got any insight as to how to get around it, other than perhaps looking in POTS and these sorts of books.
Yeah, I mean, the struggle is in New Search, you can go
to the Latin translation.
It's all in. Search the Latin word, find those references, and then switch back to the English.
Okay.
So you work it back.
You would need a lexicon, wouldn't you?
No, you can do it in, like, so what would happen if you looked up Lux? you would get all the Latin references for Lux. You'd click on the reference, it would bring up the Latin, but then you'd switch to the English translation and you can get it that way. But that is time consuming.
Yeah. But you can't do it in reverse. You can't go light, no. Switch to the Latin translation.
Oh, yes, you can. And see what it is.
But then you've got to trawl through the Latin text to actually find which of the words
it is. So if you do it backwards, at least you get consistent use of the Latin word.
Yeah. So look, things to be aware of. I guess if you really struggle, this is where we turn to our dear president. And people like him, you know, Philip's done it.
Phone a friend.
Phone a friend, that's right. And get a sense of, you know, what's actually going on here. Michael.
Right. I've come across a significant example of where translation can have a deep impact on its meaning. And I'll just read it out because when it was pointed out to me, it was very significant and it ties in with the theme of today's presentation. It says in John 3:3, "Except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." And and Dr. Groves commented on this. He says, although the translation does give a true general picture, it misses a very important point. And if you translate that from the Greek, it reads, "Truly, truly, I say to you, except anyone is born from above, he cannot see the kingdom." So that true translation indicates that there's a divine influx that helps us to be reborn. And with the older translation, you miss that. So it just is, to me, a very strong example of the effect of a bad translation.
In the New King James, it says, "Most assuredly I say to you, you must be born again to see the kingdom of God," which is different again.
Mm. So the key idea is you need to be born from above, you need to be open to some transformative energy.
And you need to be born of water and of the Spirit to enter it.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes.
Thank you, Julie. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to do something which is